This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. 50 years ago this week, a team of researchers at General Electric created something new, a solid-state device that could emit visible red light without getting hot like a light bulb. Other groups have made light-emitting devices, but this was the first practical one that could make light that a person could see rather than invisible infrared light. That work by Nick Holonyak and colleagues went on to be basis for just about every LED staring back at you, you know, those little red lights on all your little devices. This was the first one. Nick also did pioneering work on other electronic devices, including lasers. And when the Journal of Applied Physics Letters drew up a list of the 5 most important papers it had published up to 2006. Nick's name was on 2 of them, and he's here to talk to us now. Nick Holonyak is the John Bardeen Endowed Chair in Electrical and Computing Engineering and Physics in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering, University of Illinois in Urbana, Illinois. He joins us by phone. Welcome back to the program, Nick.
Thanks, Ira. You and I talked about this stuff in Washington when the MIT Lemelson Prize was given, remember? And so this is our second contact, maybe more.
I hope we have a lot more to go. And I want you let's talk about this anniversary.
Well, it's October 9th. My colleague in Schenectady, Bob Hall, beat me with gallium arsenide, which is much simpler. And I shifted my crystal system to the red and made a homemade alloy, gallium arsenide phosphide. And you are absolutely right. That was the first one that anyone could have. They could buy it at an exorbitant price from GE at the time, but it started off as a laser. And that's just a special form of LED that says this is a very powerful light source. And I knew from that, this is going to go. But, of course, I didn't know it would take 50 years of work to get to where we are now.
Well, lasers are pretty new at that time, right?
Oh, yes. In fact, the conventional laser was only 2 years old, and it taught us that light could be coherent, but it didn't say anything about a semiconductor and whether a semiconductor would do this. And actually, the furor started with Redeker's group from Lincoln Laboratories, MIT, reporting that they had gotten good spontaneous light out of gallium arsenide. And then several of us went home and realized there ought to be a way to make that coherent into a laser, and we did it. But I'm the guy that was crazy enough to make my own homemade alloy, and which a lot of people didn't think would work, and shift it up to where the eye could see, and that's the whole basis of it.
Why did it take 50 years?
Well, because these crystal systems are complicated. How to grow them is complicated. There are wrong methods and arguments about right ways to proceed, and it's a zigzag process. You make a bad move, and then you're going to make another move to find your way, and it just took a long while to get there, and you had to, as you made progress, you're shifting into more complicated crystals as you go higher in the periodic table of the elements to get the lighter elements that will shift you to higher energy and to shift the color from red to orange to yellow to blue, green, and then blue. And still, green and yellow is still a problem, but, we're learning. Mm-hmm. We're getting there. And one other thing I should mention. If you study this carefully, you find this is an ultimate lamp. It's right in the current path that the light is being generated. It's not some kind of secondary process where you heat up something or have a gas discharge and then the energy is shifted to some other process and then finally you get light. No, this is right in the current path from one terminal to the other. Right in that path is the process that generates the light. It's an ultimate lamp.
Is that why it works so efficiently?
Yes, and that's why. You know that as we get smarter and smarter with dealing with complicated materials and get to where we're going, the only loss will be ultimately just ohmic loss, resistive loss, because when you move charge, you're going to get some resistance, and that's going to be loss.
Do you still have that first?
Yes. In fact, 3 weeks ago, General Electric came here because they now realize that this is coming with a vehemence and changing, that all the lighting is going to be this, and of course, they've got a lot of pride in this, and they could use it for their purposes. So they came here and filmed one morning. I was pretty rough on them in a sense because I said, I'm not going to do anything special for you guys. I believe in you. I worked with you and all that. But just come in here with your stuff and film. And so it's in my drawer here.
You're not giving it to the Smithsonian or
Hey, Ira, it's a tiny little crystal, and it's hard to believe that a tiny little crystal, you tickle it with a current, and wham, it'll blind you. And in other words, I don't really know what ought to be done. You know, John Bardeen didn't give his first transistor box to the Smithsonian. It's here in a museum, and I don't know. That's an interesting question. Yeah. Where should things like that go?
But were you worried that when you this little thing gave off some light that it might blind you? I mean, didn't know what would happen.
Yes, but then an expert in light, Zernike, a famous name, started in Europe. His son came from Connecticut, from PerkinElmer, to see my first lasers, this red stuff, at GE in Syracuse. And I said, watch out, Fritz, you're going to hurt your eye. And he laughed and he says, no, Nick, since it's visible and the way this thing has a pattern, I can come into it from the edge, and I can tell right away when I'm overloading my eye. So if you're experienced, you won't hurt yourself. But it's true that if you don't know what you're doing, yes, a laser can hurt your eye.
Didn't you also invent the laser diode that's in all the CD and the DVD players?
That was the basis for this.
It's everywhere.
Yes.
I hope you got a lot of royalties from all this.
Oh, no, it doesn't work that way, Ira. And no, I got enough.
Do you get a dollar? Do they sign it away for – you sign your rights away for a dollar or something?
At Bell Labs, you sign it away for a buck. And in the group I was in at GE, they give you a share of stock and a little bit of cash so you can pay IRS, because it would be unseemly to get and have to pay for something that's a gift that's considered income.
So where did you enjoy, or what? Compare the places where you worked. You worked with John Bardeen and the invention of the transistor at Bell, and now you worked at
I worked with John. He had already come here, and I worked with John, and then I went to Bell and worked with John Maul, and then later was in the Army in a group they won't let me talk about too much. It was an intelligence group in Japan. And then when I got out, I was 6 years at GE, and that's where this happened. And then I had a fantastic colleague there, Bob Hall. Bob's getting a little bit old, but he was a stalwart figure. He would have been the next Nobel Prize I would have given in the semiconductor field. But I had access, you're right, to some of the very, very best people that were pioneers.
Must have been very exciting during those times.
And incidentally, I'm with some very good people now, and we've converted the transistor into a laser. In other words, we've got a transistor that's still a transistor, but it's also putting out a laser signal. And I'd like to live a little bit longer, and I'm beginning to get a little bit frail. And boy, there's a lot of fun stuff to do yet.
Mm-hmm.
That ought to be a message to your young people to get going, get in school, and start making something happen. Because if an old guy tells you he did it all, he's lying.
So you're talking about Milton Feng and the transistor laser.
Yes.
What does that do, the transistor laser?
His transistors are the fastest transistors on Earth, hundreds of gigahertz, and there's a lost signal in there that's important to the operation of the transistor, and it turns out it's not generating heat, it's generating light, and you can arrange it inside to help it a little bit and turn that light into coherent light. So now there's a coherent electrical signal and a coherent optical signal, and this is going to be the basis of some fantastic chip. Boy, I'd like to see some of that, but it's going to take a long time, Ira, because these are complicated things to do and complicated to make, and it just takes a while to learn it all.
Did anybody foresee the ubiquity that the LED would turn into?
Well, I think all of us knew, yes, it's a light emitter, but we had bitter arguments with various people about which crystals, how to do this and all that, and I feel good because I was on the right side with the kind of crystal I was doing. In fact, told the Reader's Digest writer back then that this is the basis to go in the direction of LEDs in the practical world. And in the February 1963 Reader's Digest, he'll find that he quotes me for that. So I'm taking a little bit of credit. But I did only a piece. The other folks added a lot to it, including students, my students.
Do you think if Thomas Edison had still been around, he would have understood what you were talking about?
No, because he did not have the right kind of training, and I think that's the basis of some of his arguments with Tesla. Tesla had more of a scientific base, but Edison was a fantastic inventor, but I don't think, that the bulb did a lot for a long time, but it can't last. It just can't last. It's not based on the right mechanic. Mm.
Is there a bulb beyond the LED, do you think? Is there something next?
No, I think what I'm talking about is ultimate. Now, you may find some further versions of it, but you're never going to exceed it because, in principle, this thing can be 100% efficient, 100% conversion of electrical energy to light energy.
Wow.
There are some practicalities that, like the ohmic loss, the heat loss from currents.
Right. But 100, what, you mean
99.99? Well, no. Wire loss, contact loss, stuff like that, you know. In other words, if John Bardeen had gotten the superconductivity come up to room temperature and we could get a lot of the wiring done with superconductors, then we would get all the way to 100%.
I understand that there was a cake this week with 50 LED candles.
Yes. And I was inundated with students and visitors and all of that because there's a fascination to this, and they're all happy to see something like this and realize that when I started and where I started is where they are, and that they can do something, and that ought to be the goal: school, learn, and then use your own abilities to go further.
Do they realize that?
I know some did. Now some, others, I think, are still thinking, I'm going to quickly grab a degree and get a fantastic job and get rich. But I don't think they're thinking beyond getting rich. Now, I don't know if that's a good life.
Well, congratulations to you, Nick.
Thanks, Ira. And boy, you sound like a young man yet. So
thank you.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
You made my day, and I hope to speak with you for many more years to come.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Nick Holonyak, John Bardeen, Endowed Chair in Electrical and Computer Engineering and Physics, in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering, University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign.